Hello, Tom.
Hello, Deborah.
You're no
disappointed there's no sofa.
I'm sorry about that, Tom. It's too heavy to carry it, so we'll have to do with chairs. You are no stranger to our stage, and thank you for coming back. Can you introduce yourself to those of us who maybe don't know you and tell us a little bit about yourself and your job?
Okay. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Tom Clark, and I'm here this morning in my professional capacity as, hold the microphone up closer, okay, thank you. Here in my professional capacity as the General Manager of Access NI, and that's a post that I've held since 2008. And unfortunately, all my working life I've been a civil servant, but I'm able to control the side effects of that with strong medication, so that's not so bad. Outside work, I'm an elder in Garnerville Presbyterian Church. I'm married to Tracy, and I run a part-time taxi service for two grown-up children. So that's me.
Tom, I heard a rumour that you have completed the accredited preacher scheme. Is that true?
Well, what that goes to prove is that you can't fool all of the people all of the time.
Thank you. So back to business, Tom. A lot has changed since the last time you were sat here at the Taking Care Conference, which was in 2011. Can you briefly explain what changes have been introduced regarding police checks and Access NI?
I can indeed. Look, I think the biggest change that when I was here in 2011, we were all getting ready for a thing called the Vetting and Barring Scheme. This was something that the Labour government introduced. And the idea was that anyone who worked with children was going to have to register centrally. So in other words, it's going to be like a licence to work with children. And then the coalition government came in 2011, and it decided it didn't want to run with this type of scheme, and it made a number of very important changes. The first change was that there was no longer a requirement for people to be police checked before they could work with children. What the government said was, right, okay, we will give you the eligibility to be checked, but it's up to the employer or it's up to the voluntary organisation to decide if they want to check you. So that was one of the big changes. The other big change that came in was they changed the definition of what we call regulated activity. And I understand, now I sound like a preacher getting up on a Sunday morning and telling you what the original Greek word is in the New Testament, but regulated activity is just really another word for working very closely with children. But they changed the definition of who would actually be in regulated activity. And the third thing that changed was that only those people in regulated activity could be checked against the lists of those people who are not allowed to work with children in the whole of the UK. Now, the main impact of that for churches was probably in vulnerable adults work. There was a lot of vulnerable adults work that you used to have to be checked for that you don't have to be checked for anymore. But for children, working with children, it didn't really make a lot of difference. Most people who work with children still need an enhanced access NI check. Now, what's an enhanced access NI check? It's a check of police records in both here in Northern Ireland and in GB. It's a check of a police intelligence database to make sure that the police don't know anything about you. And where appropriate, a check of the list of those people who are not allowed to work with children or with vulnerable adults. And by the way, there are tens of thousands of people on that list. It's not just a few hundred right across the UK. There are tens of thousands of people across the UK who are not allowed to work with children and vulnerable adults. And in Access NI, inevitably we'll find two or three every year.
Thank you, Tom. Just so folks are aware, we have been talking a lot about the new changes and what regulated activity means at our training, particularly the minister's training. And it certainly is my intention to put together a wee bit of very clear guidance for Presbyterians to know what that actually means. And I know that I'll run that past you so we have your approval. So another question for you, Tom. I hear there are more changes to come. Do you have any idea what these changes will be? And can we ask when?
Yes, you can indeed. Unfortunately, this is an area of work where everything changes. It's changed so much since 2008 with Diamond into it. And unfortunately, there are more changes on the way. And it's hard to keep up with all of this. It's certainly hard for me to keep up with it, never mind you who are the practitioners of it. But first of all, there's a couple of big changes happening from Monday. Monday coming, there's a couple of big changes. The first thing is that we're now going to provide information on what we call people who have been convicted of what we call minor offences. So if you get a police caution, or if you get an informed warning, or if you are subject to a diversionary youth conference, now these are all convictions, but they're where people don't go to court. You may remember, for example, the most famous example recently of an informed warning is Jerry Kelly, who got one for Land Rover surfing. So that's an informed warning. We will be beginning to provide information about that from Monday. We haven't been doing that for quite some time, but from Monday we'll be doing that. But at the same time, what we'll be doing is we'll be removing old and minor convictions from certificates. So someone who had a one-off driving offence 12 years ago will not be disclosing that anymore. Someone who had a caution, a young person had a caution over 2 years ago, we won't be disclosing that either. So we're removing or filtering old and minor convictions from certificates. So that's from Monday. And then from next year, from this time next year, 2015, two great big changes that you'll want to know about. First of all, you can be able to apply for your access and NI check online. Whoa, it's not better than having to fill out all those forms and one thing or another. So that's the one big change. And the second big change is that you'll be able to join something called the Update Service. And the update service is where we will monitor your certificate so that you can take it from job to job. So in other words, if you are a volunteer in the Presbyterian Church and you want to use your certificate to volunteer somewhere else, at the minute you have to get a new access NI check. From when we get this new scheme in 2015, you will no longer have to do it if you join what's known as the update service. So those are the things to keep out an eye out for next year. But from Monday, two big changes that that people like Deborah will see in relation to the checks that she gets.
Thank you, Tom, for explaining all of that to us and actually making it sound quite simple. Thank you very much. You're off the hook. So, Olive, it's your turn now. First of all, Olive, what time did you have to get up at this morning?
The alarm went at 6 a.m.
6 a.m.
And so two little babies woke up and things were not all that calm in the house this morning.
So we really appreciate you coming along, Olive, such an early start.
No problem.
Can you tell us a little bit then about who you are and the organisation that you work for?
Sure. My name is Olive Ring. I work in the National Youth Council. I've been there 5 years. My job is National Child Protection Manager, so that really means that I have responsibility to resource the youth work sector in the Republic of Ireland and to ensure that all youth work organisations that are in membership of MYCI and also in the wider sector have access to information, resources, training, vetting, everything they need to know about their own responsibilities with regards to child protection and welfare. And the National Youth Council, in its wider remit, acts as the collective representative body for youth work.
Brilliant. And PCI are a member of the National Youth Council's Youth Work Vetting Consortium.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean?
Okay, so we provide a Youth Work Garda Vetting Consortium, which is a conduit down to the Garda Vetting Unit. So in order to access vetting, organisations need to be registered with the Garda Vetting Unit. If you're a smaller organisation and you don't have the number of applications that would require registration, you can access the vetting unit via the consortium, via the conduit that we provide. So our members can send their vetting forms into our office, we process them and on their behalf send them down to the vetting unit. We don't have any role around decision making or deciding who's suitable, we literally process the forms on the organisation's behalf.
Great. And PCI, we have been Garda vetting since, I think, 2006. Mm. Can you tell me, is it now a legal requirement?
Yeah, interested to hear what Tom was saying. We're at a slightly different place in the Republic. We have had vetting since about 2006, and I suppose across the youth work sector it has become more or less widespread and most organisations now compliant. But what has been really best practice? So we haven't had a legal requirement to Garda vet. What we've had is good practice, and certainly under our national policy we've expected organisations to do Garda vetting. We have now a National Vetting Bureau bill. It was enacted and we are just waiting for it to be commenced. So the commencement date has been delayed, and I think it's similar to what you've been talking about, primarily due to some amendments that are being considered which relate to what Tom mentioned around disclosures of minor convictions. So there has been a delay on the commencement for that reason, but it is expected certainly to be commenced before the end of this year, but it's okay. One of these things where we watch and timeframes move, but hopefully the end of this
year. Okay, but it is coming.
It is coming.
Brilliant. Now, since our Garda vetting forms make their way to your office, do you have any top tips for any folk here who'll be checking the forms before they're sent?
Well, I spoke to our vetting administrator about this, and I think she's been here at your event before. Yeah, and I suppose some of the things she commonly sees are maybe gaps in addresses. So from time of birth right up to present date, all addresses need to be accounted for. So sometimes people might leave a year or two unmentioned in that form. Unfortunately, we will be sent back, which adds to delays. And I suppose some of the other things then, just around making everything very legible and clear, particularly your own name or names. And I suppose the good news is, similar to what Tom mentioned, we have coming e-vetting, which, again, is one of these things that you would hope we would have had organised before now. But the e-vetting pilot is taking place currently, and NYCI are a member of that pilot group. So the likelihood is, from 2015 onwards, organisations will be able to access that through an online service, but via their authorised signatory. So again, we'll be doing information and some seminars to explain to organisations. But what certainly looks at this stage to be a very straightforward process and much more timely. So vetting at the moment is about a 4-week return time, and that hopes to be down to 2 weeks, and even with e-vetting to remain at 2 weeks. So that's all very hopeful for the future.
Brilliant, thank you. And one final question, Olive. Folk who are here this morning who live in the Republic of Ireland will probably have heard of the Children's First Bill. Can you explain briefly what that is?
Sure. We've had Children First national guidance. So Children First being, I suppose, the national policy around child protection and welfare. What has been recommended over the years is that that is placed on a statutory basis. And we had in mid-2012 draft legislation. So a lot of people thought mistakenly that the legislation was actually passed. It hasn't passed for lots of reasons, but the intention of Children First is really to make sure that organisations are fulfilling their requirements around child protection and safeguarding, having things in place such as a designated officer, a keeping children safe plan or policy, making sure everybody is trained, making sure that organisations know their responsibilities around reporting. So the Children First legislation will provide for all of those things, and the likelihood is, again, that it will be published in the coming weeks. We've heard it was due to go to Cabinet last week. Unfortunately, it was on the agenda and wasn't quite reached. So we're hopeful that in the next number of weeks it will be published and enacted before the end of this year. So it's a very important development, because it does provide for a legal requirement in organisations to have all of the things, I suppose, that we are doing anyway, but to have them in place and possibly open to inspection as well.
Brilliant. Olive and Tom, thank you so much for giving of your time. Let's give them a round of applause. And now I'd like to welcome my final guest on the sofa, Gary Proctor. Okay, Gary, tell us a little bit about who you are and what your work involves.
Well, good morning, everyone. Gary Proctor's my name. I work for Oval Insurance, previously Bartholomew and James. The hot topic of the week, really, is that we've just been bought over again. So the fourth new name in 6 years. But if you still phone us on the same number and you call us Bartholomew and James, we'll still answer you. But by the end of this year, you'll see our new name is Arthur J. Gallagher. So we're now owned by the Americans.
Very good, thank you. Gary, can you tell us a little bit about the sorts of claims that you've been dealing with recently regarding churches?
We deal with a lot of claims, unfortunately. But by being the appointed brokers to the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, we insure all but 13 of the congregations throughout the north of Ireland, so we're kept very busy. We're also appointed as the brokers to the Church of Ireland and other denominations. So I'll give you a few examples here of the types of claims, but I have to be careful in that. Well, none of these claims are Presbyterian claims, okay?
It's good to know, yeah.
So I can give you many examples of Presbyterian claims, but I wouldn't want to embarrass anyone. We still see a number of claims for slips, trips and falls, obviously, and also sporting injuries. And some of these can be serious. So we're about to pay, for example, £130,000 for a young chap who was injured as a result of a Unihawk game. Got actually hit in the head with the stick. So they can be serious. The other things that we're seeing at the moment are what I call New Age claims. Claims that in the last 20 years we could maybe never have envisaged. So claims for defamation, claims for the appointment or the non-appointment of volunteers in line with your recruitment processes. And we're also seeing, we also dealt with a claim not so long ago for someone who gave an honest reference for a volunteer appointment. Now, they were so honest, they'd applied for a volunteer post in a well-known charity, and the context of it was that they had to be a churchgoer and that sort of thing. So the person who gave the reference was very honest and said that they actually didn't darken the door of a church and hadn't done for the last 5 years. So they didn't get the appointment to the charity and subsequently sued. So we're seeing all sorts of things, New Age claims, yeah. But would you like a couple of funnies? You always like a couple of funnies, okay. These aren't necessarily child-related, but they're quite good. I'm sure they weren't good for the person who was injured, but we had a workman. There's a workman suing at the moment. He went up to repair a mobile phone mast, which are coming up in a number of church towers and steeples. And of course, the church didn't tell them what time the bells rang.
Oh dear.
So we now have a workman with poor hearing, unfortunately. And we also have the two ladies having a cup of tea after an event one evening, and both of them got hit in the head when a stuffed crocodile fell off the wall and injured their neck and shoulders and whatever. But the most serious one, and we'll get to... We'll get to risk assessment and that sort of thing in a moment, and there'll be a sharp intake of breath from everybody in the room probably when I say that. But we have dealt with a really serious claim overseas, and we are seeing more and more churches obviously spreading their outreach across the water. We had to pay £250,000 to fly two young girls home on a private air ambulance when they were involved in a car accident. And what we learned in that was that car insurance isn't compulsory in India. Okay, so there was no claim against the vehicle. £250,000 to fly a plane from Geneva to India and back to Belfast via Moscow. One of the guys was an employee, so we subsequently faced a claim for injury to that employee back in the UK, and there was a six-figure sum paid for the injuries. Now, these are lifelong injuries, unfortunately. So not only does risk assessment apply in your halls or in local activities, folks, if you're going overseas, you really need to carefully plan.
Brilliant. That's very useful to know, Gary. So you did mention risk assessment already. What can leaders, elders, ministers here, what can we do to protect against these sorts of claims?
Planning is vital. And in that planning process, you need to consider all the risks. Without question, every insurance company nowadays is becoming very, very particular in relation to whether they pay or not. They will look at every area of the policy, especially if it's a large claim, and they will try their best to wriggle out of it. You know, it doesn't matter who the insurance company is. So we're the guys at the front line. We're there to protect you. Our best recommendation is, you know, you will be asked, what prevention measures did you take in order to prevent the accident happening? And you should have an audit trail. Part of that audit trail should be a risk assessment, and all of that is detailed and taken care.
Okay, thank you. Now, if anyone is really particularly concerned that they might have to do a wee bit more work in this area, what advice could you give them?
See a doctor. phone us. We're there to give advice. At the end of the day, we don't want to receive the call and say, oh no, there's no cover for this, or the insurance company are going to turn this down. We don't want to be left in that position. So phone us well in advance. If you're planning activities and whatever, we will give you plenty of advice. We have a team of four dedicated to church insurance, most of you. If you've ever phoned the office, Lindsay, Pauline, Andrew, who's new to us, and Andrea, or myself, certainly.
Brilliant. Gary, thank you so much for keeping us up to date. Gary's little table and stand is over there for more information. Okay.